Welcome to the Kona Edge, where you'll discover what the best triathletes in the world do to give them the edge.
Thank you for downloading and listening to The Kona Edge. I am Brad Brown. It's brilliant to have you with us. And happy Wednesday if you're listening to this on the day we're recording it. It's another gorgeous, gorgeous day in Cape Town in South Africa. And it is race week for me. I've got a marathon coming up on Sunday. And if you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you'll know that's quite a big thing because I've been struggling with a bit of a back injury. And in my last Ironman, I literally did not run one step of the marathon. We've been building slowly and running another marathon this weekend. So I'm just super stoked to be running pain-free. It's going to be slow, I can tell you that much. But yeah, I'm just thrilled to be out on the road once again. And I haven't been on the bike for a while. And if I must be honest, I actually can't wait for this marathon to get out of the way because I am just amped. I want to get back on the bike and back on the water. I'm feeling pretty motivated. And don't tell my wife, but I've entered another Ironman. This is between you and me, okay? No letting her know. But yeah, I've entered another Ironman early next year, so it's time to get some serious training done, considering I haven't been in the water for probably close on a year and haven't been on the bike for a few months. It's time to get working. So as soon as this marathon's out the way, then it is good to go. Today on the Kona Edge, we get to chat to someone whose accent's very similar to mine, but he lives in Australia and has lived in the UK for a long, long time as well. I don't know if he considers himself a South African anymore, but yeah, he's a citizen of the world. Barry Ulfson joins us on today's show to talk a little bit about his build-up to Kona and what it takes to qualify and race on the Big Island. That's coming up in a moment as well. And a massive thank you to our sponsor of the show, Jack Rabbit. JackRabbit.com is a phenomenal, phenomenal organization. They've got a very extensive network of specialist running stores across the United States. They've also got a very big online footprint. If you're looking for anything running shoes related, they have everything you need, from a really wide range of makes and brands to sizes, which is pretty impressive as well. So if you'd like to find out more about Jack Rabbit and also stand in line to win yourself one of four pairs of Hoka One One running shoes this month, because we're teaming up with jackrabbit.com and Hoka to give away those shoes. We've given away one pair already this week, and we've got another three to go. So get into that draw. All you have to do is head over to this URL, okay? It's jackrabbit.com/Kona Edge. Alternatively, what you can do is text the word Jack Rabbit, all one word, okay? That's JACKRABBIT to 44222, and I'll text you the details straight back on how you can get into that draw. And speaking of the winners, I caught up with our first winner yesterday, and unfortunately not the greatest of lines, but yeah, I wanted to play a little bit of that call for you, and then we'll be chatting to Barry Ulfson on today's episode of The Kona Edge. Paul, it's Brad Brown from the Kona Edge. Are you well?
Oh, I'm doing well. How are you?
Very, very good, thanks. Have you got a few minutes to chat?
Yes, sir, I do.
Excellent. Paul, I got your details from Melanie at Jack Rabbit.
Correct.
Congratulations on winning.
Well, thank you.
Paul, where in the States are you?
I'm in Nashville, Tennessee.
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic. You weren't up at Chattanooga this weekend?
I did not. I had hoped to. I had a couple of race, but I was able to get us in there.
Paul, Melanie tells me you've got a race coming up as well in the next month or so.
Ironman Louisville.
Oh, brilliant. Well, I just wanted to give you a call just to say congratulations on winning those Hoka One Ones, and yeah, just to personally thank you for listening to the Kona Edge and entering the contest.
Thank you guys to sponsor that, and for Jack Rabbit to sponsor that with you. So I really appreciate it. I always enjoy listening to the show.
Well, brilliant. Well, Paul, best of luck for Louisville. I hope it all goes according to plan. Thanks so much again for entering and listening to the Kona Edge. Much appreciated. And yeah, hopefully they'll get those shoes to you soon. I know Melanie has got your details. And yeah, let me know what you think of them. I'd love to get your thoughts.
Okay, man. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye. Today's Coach's Corner is brought to you by Doug Guthrie Personal Training. Doug has a passion for seeing people improve and succeed. A 14 times Ironman finisher, two of those on the Big Island, a USA T-Level 1 certified coach, head coach of the YMCA tri-team, Doug has the unique ability to meet athletes wherever they are in their journey. His motivation comes from helping athletes improve and meet their goals at any skill level. As a self-coach, two times Kona qualifier and finisher, Doug's experience places him in the shoes of those training for their first sprint, to those who need to know what has to be adjusted in their plan to get them to the next level in order to qualify for the World Championships. Discover more about Doug, head over to thekonaedge.com/coaching, and don't forget, if you're a coach or if you have a coaching business and would like to get a plug on the podcast, head over to thekonaedge.com/coaching. We head to Australia now here on the Kona Edge, and the accent you're going to hear is maybe not necessarily Australian. It's more like mine, Barry Olofsson. Barry, welcome onto the Kona Edge.
Oh, thanks for having me.
You're an ex-South African transplanted in Australia. Tell me more.
Yeah, well, I left South Africa. I was brought up on the south coast, Shelly Beach, and left there probably 2001, I think I did. And then I left and I went to London, stayed there for about 13 years, and found myself in Australia in 2014. And here I am, loving it.
And quite funny that where you ended up in Australia, probably fairly similar climate-wise and lifestyle-wise to where you were on the south coast in South Africa.
Exactly. The Sunshine Coast is definitely a carbon copy of the weather that we got back on the south coast, for sure.
I take it you're very outdoorsy. Are you a surfer?
I used to surf a bit when we were younger, but yes, living in London, not much surf around there. And there's plenty of sharks in WA when I was staying there. I've just moved down to the Sunshine Coast on the east coast of Australia. So maybe I'll get back into surfing one day after Ironman lets me go.
let's touch on triathlon, because that's what we wanted to chat about. Where did your love for the sport start?
It actually started in London. I had a few of my mates, a couple of my mates, Gary and George, they started doing this triathlon thing. And for those of you that have done a stint in London, you'll know that it's a very much working culture back there. So when they started triathlon, we were quite upset that we'd lost our drinking partners. So basically, I just got drunk one day and one night at the Slug in Wimbledon, and I signed up for a triathlon, and I haven't looked back since then.
That's so funny. I'm actually quite surprised at how big the triathlon scene in London is. You mentioned the big drinking culture, but there's a big triathlon culture, and it's growing fast.
There is, and you know, I didn't even know it existed at the time. But then once you get involved in the sport, you do realize that it's actually, it's actually quite big.
Were you pretty active and sporty growing up back in South Africa?
Absolutely not. Not in the slightest, though. A bit of surfing, but that was about it. Played a little bit of rugby in standard six only because I had to, but other than that, that was it.
I find that quite interesting. And then picking up this triathlon thing, did you find it came pretty easily?
I wouldn't say it was easy. I definitely found a competitive edge that I never knew existed when I first started. Running has always been, it's not a love of mine. And that was probably the hardest thing after I got over swimming, and I still struggle with the run. Yeah, it didn't come easy. It had a lot of hard work, a lot of hours, and you eventually just it doesn't get any easier. You just get faster, someone said.
tell me about the moment when you sobered up after deciding to do that first one, and the thought that crossed your mind, and the build up, and how did that first one go?
Well, I can remember being pretty bummed that I dropped a few thousand pounds on eBay on buying a TT bike that I'd never known another bike. And all of a sudden I've got this nice time trial bike coming on eBay. But I was pretty keen, eh? By that time I was a bit over the whole drinking scene. And, you know, you do it every weekend. You just get it's just the same thing over and over again. Every weekend you're going out, you're getting hammered, you wake up with a hangover, then you do it all over again, and then you go to work, you know, during the week, and then, groundhog day. So it was, it was nice finding something else to do with your time and your money, because as a lot of you will know, that triathlon does suck a lot of your finances up, especially in the beginning.
Yeah, absolutely. What was that first triathlon that you ended up entering and doing?
It was one in Austin, Texas. It's a 70.3. We just wanted to do something of like an adventure. You know, we wanted to travel somewhere and go do a race somewhere. And the boys were saying, oh, let's go to the States. And I was like, all right, keen. I'll come to the States and I'll do the triathlon at the same time. So, it was quite a sick trip. It was definitely eye-opening, the whole American culture and Texas as a whole.
And Barry, typical South African, go big or go home. Nothing like starting with a sprint. You all in?
Yeah, I went all in. I did do a sprint and Olympic distance in that 12 or 14-week period or whatever before we left. We got a few sly looks when I was doing a sprint and a Olympic in my board shorts. I didn't jump straight into the lycra. It took me a while to get all tight and follow the trend.
I love that. How did that first one in Texas go?
Yeah, it didn't go too bad. I think I managed a fifth or a sixth in my age group. I went under five, and I didn't think it was a big deal, but at the time. But everyone is quite surprised that I went under 5 hours for my first half. So by then I thought, oh, okay, maybe this is something I'm good at, and you know, it just turns out that the work you put in, what you get out, and I haven't done too badly.
I mean, that's incredible. Knowing what you know now and what you have achieved, do you wish you had started earlier? Because you've obviously got ability.
Yeah, I think I started when I was 29. I do wish I started earlier, but who knows what would have happened if I did start earlier. I might have got tired of it sooner, you know. I don't know. I do sometimes think about that, and maybe if I had a little bit more guidance when I was younger, and I could have maybe worked on speed a little bit more.
And talk to me about the competitiveness. I mean, you, like you say, you found this competitive streak in you that you didn't know existed. I'm surprised at that. Surely, I mean, even though you weren't sporty, there must have been things. I mean, you're competitive now and you love that competitiveness, but there must have been things growing up that you maybe board games, you hated losing. Were you that type of kid?
No, I never played any games. I was just a beach bum, to be honest, though. Like, I don't think there was I can't remember ever being competitive. I just probably got caught up in the whole Ironman whirlwind and just wanted to get to Kona and, you know, wanted to be better, wanted to be faster
It's just
one of those sports that gets you, eh?
I mean, were you roped and sucked in full on after your first sort of race, or was it after that first 70.3 that you decided, you know what, this is pretty cool, I'm going to stick around this and take this seriously?
Oh, yeah, it was probably after the first 70.3. Any spare money that I had after that all went on to, you know, into triathlon equipment. I had a new bike after that, you know, and I tried every single gadget that was being marketed at the time. You know, triathlon was everything in those first few years. It's calmed down a lot, but I remember getting fully sucked in.
And the decision to make the jump to the big one, to the full?
Oh, it wasn't hard. I think the very next year, that was, Austin was in October, and then I did my first full the next August. No, it would have been July. My first one was Austria. It was one of those years that hasn't been repeated yet. I think it was like 34 degrees. They cancelled wetsuits. There was a big palaver about that. No one was happy about having to swim without a wetsuit. And yeah, I didn't do too bad there. On the second lap of the bike, I really did feel like I was riding with a flat tire, and turned out I was. I had to have someone tell me that. So yeah, it was a long day. 10 hours and 20 I did. It was very hot. I remember having some serious sunburn after that. And yeah, and I'm sure I vowed never to do another one, but you know, I signed up probably within the next week or so. I'd entered South Africa.
And when did Kona? When did the thought of possibly qualifying for the Big Island come onto your radar?
Oh, I think after Austin. I wanted to do it in South Africa the next year, and yes, I got sick on the flight over. But before that, 2 weeks before that, I was out in Lanzarote. This is how serious I was, bro. You know, I used to go on these training camps. Whenever I could get time off work, I'd fly to Lanzarote in the English winter and go train out there. And I think it was maybe 2 or 3 weeks before South Africa. Yes, I had a big off on the bike in Lanzarote, and yes, I had a concussion. I was asking some stupid questions. I was pretty badly cut up and stitched up in the head, but I still got on that flight to South Africa, and I was still racing, and I was still on. You know, it didn't set me back too much. I didn't break anything. And then I got sick on the flight over. And yeah, so for race week before the gun shot off, I was bedridden. But again, did the same time in South Africa, 10 hours 20. I was bitterly disappointed at that, because I'd flown my parents over to come and watch, and you know, this was going to happen. This was going to be, I was going to qualify for Kona, but yeah, shit happens. That race didn't happen, but I think I was signed up for Roth after that, because I wanted to go fast, but I cancelled that race and teed up Cairns for when I moved to Australia. And that's where I actually qualified for the first time in Cairns.
What does it take for someone who's done it numerous times? What does it take to qualify for Kona?
I think patience, and be realistic. I see a lot of guys training for Kona, and they're doing these massive hours, you know, 20, 25-hour weeks, and they're trying to hold down a job. And I can only say to those guys is you don't need to be knocking 20 and 25-hour weeks to get to Kona. That's what the pros do. You know, they're next level. And if you're going to be working as well, you can look at my Strava. If I go over 15 hours a week, that's a lot. That's a big week for me. So, yeah, patience and, I don't know what else I could suggest. Just determination and drive. You've got to want it to get it.
And it's interesting. I mean, one of the things that pops up time and time again, and it sounds so simple, but it's, I mean, you say patience and consistency would probably be the other one, and consistency over time. And that's where the patience comes in.
Yes. Yeah. Get a good program or get a good coach and be consistent. Don't add stuff when you don't need it, you know, like, think about recovering more than racking up the hours. Mm.
Barry, for you, let's talk about that balance and work-wise. You're pretty busy work-wise. Tell me about what you do and sort of life outside of triathlon.
So at the moment, I work for Bombardier. It's a train manufacturing company that I actually worked for them back in London. And since I've been in the Sunshine Coast, they've got another job for me here. So I've recently started with them. I work away during the week, because it's a bit far from where I live. So I live away during the week. And that way I can, you know, try and get in a session before and after work. But before that, I was working in the mining industry, working 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. That was pretty good for training. There were long days, 12-hour days, but when you don't have to cook for yourself or clean or talk to the missus, you can get a lot done in a couple of hours before and after work.
And then looking at sort of just getting the balance right, I mean, you talk about working away and working long hours. How important and how big a role does planning your week ahead of time, knowing what your schedule is and where you're going to fit what in?
I pretty much work off one of Brett Sutton's programs, a generic program you can download off his website. So I know exactly what every day is going to be for me. So I just make time. I make time around work, whether that's getting up early and getting something in the morning, and then after work getting something off. It's doable. You know, for the reasonable hours I do is, you know, 15 hours a week. I think my longest weekday session is 90 minutes, so it's doable.
Barry, you've been around the sport for a while now and you've had quite a bit of success. Are you still changing things up, or have you found a sort of recipe that works for you from a training perspective, sort of building blocks to your sort of goal race that you know what to do and it's the same formula time after time, or do you change things up in the build-up to various and different races?
I've been on the same program since I've qualified, since the race when I first qualified. So Cairns, the 16-week building in block before Cairns, and I haven't changed anything. You know, if it ain't broke, it doesn't need fixing. So if anything, I've become more religious on the program than I was before because it's consistent. So yeah, I don't really change anything.
What
I have done is spend a lot more time on the turbo or the kicker and the treadmill than I have in the past. So the last 2 or 3 years. And that's where you build strength. It's not very social and it's not very fun, but it definitely gets the results.
I was going to say, is that just because it's a function of what it does? You can be more focused for a shorter period of time. There's no messing about. You there to do one thing and one thing only.
Exactly that. There's not a lot of people that have the balls or the courage to go 100% on the bike, on the road. You always have that variable of, you know, potholes, cars, you know, things that could, you know, injure you. Whereas on the turbo, you can pretty much go to the wall and absolutely bury yourself. And, you know, you still walk away. Or, you know, in my case, there's not many times that I don't literally fall off the kicker or, you know, get jelly legs after the treadmill. And that's what makes you stronger, you know.
Absolutely. What are you most proud of in your triathlon career?
I guess finding my wife-to-be, eh? That's sort of the biggest thing that brought myself and Katie together is triathlon. I guess in a performance place, I think Cairns was probably last year or the year before. Cairns was probably my most proudest race because I led from the start to the finish. It was a full-on solo TT. There was no one around me all day. That was probably my best performance.
Biggest regret in the sport?
Biggest regret. I don't think I have any regrets, to be honest.
Guess
I can't think of any.
That's a good place to be. And what do you still want to achieve? I mean, you've had some great results from a racing perspective. You mentioned that performance in Cairns. But what do you still want to achieve? I mean, once this is all done, and if you have to, for whatever reason, give up, what would you be satisfied with?
A bowl. It's all I want. I just want a Kona bowl.
I was going to say, not just any bowl, because you can buy those in a supermarket. You want the bowl, don't you?
Yeah, I don't want to buy it either. Although I've been paying for it for years now. But they just need to hand it over. I want to earn it, of course, but yeah, that's it. I just want to make top five. I believe I can. It's just a matter of doing it on the day. Kona is one of those places where it doesn't matter how fast you are anywhere else in the world. You've got to be fast in Kona, and you've got to deal with the heat. And being a big guy such as myself, it's tough, eh?
Barry, what is it that's so special about Kona? If I say the word Kona, what do you think of?
Racing against the best, though. I mean, you can win your regional races, you can win your local races, and you know, it's few people might show up, but the guys that are at the top end, the real top end, they're racing in Kona, and that's where you go to be challenged. And I think, yeah, I don't know what it is. It's just probably the hype. It's definitely not the cost, because I can tell you that it's a very expensive trip. But yeah, it's just the, I don't know what it is about that island. It just draws you to it.
What advice? I mean, we've got an interesting mix of people who listen to this podcast. There's obviously lots of newbies, people who are starting out in the sport of triathlon, but there's lots of people who have qualified and raced, but there's a fairly big chunk who are itching to go or have just qualified and are looking for info about the island. What advice would you give to someone who possibly just about to qualify or has just qualified for their first one?
Well, if it's your first one, I'd say enjoy it. Go and do all the, you know, the Undy run and all the events, and you know, check it all out, enjoy it. You don't know if you're going to go there again, especially when you look at your bank account afterwards. Yeah, it's a special place, and I know it's the holy grail for a lot of people. You know, it's the pinnacle of our sport. For those that are going again and are trying to, you know, crack a good time and get a good place in, or even possibly win their age group, is try and stay away from the hype. Stay indoors. Train early. You know, get away from the, you know, the pressure and that pressure building pot that can be around the beach, because there's a lot of very fit looking people around there. As you can imagine, it can get pretty intimidating. And you know, just concentrate on your own race.
Who do you look up to in the sport, Brett? Barry, who do you sort of respect and think are brilliant competitors or athletes?
Oh, it's got to be our own fellow surfer, Fredino. He's an amazing athlete, and he's definitely taken the sport by storm. You know, he's probably one of the only guys out there that is actually making a very good living and is a superstar in the sport. Besides that, I mean, you look at people like Kyle Buchanan, is probably one of the only age group to pro athletes that has actually made it. Mm. Like, besides Lionel Sanders, because I mean, he was a age grouper before that, but Carl's really, really, really done well, and yeah, good luck to him. I hope he does even better to qualify in the top 10 this year, and you know, even his first year pro, he qualified for Kona. So yeah,
and there's another one who got his start in London.
Oh yes, yeah. He
must be must be something in the water.
Yeah, the cold weather, yeah.
I also have to laugh. I have to laugh, Barry. I also love the way us South Africans just claim everyone. I mean, you mentioned Jan Frodeno. I mean, we will take him. Roger Federer is ours, I think, as well. We can claim him because he's our South African. Us. Chris Froome, we'll take him too. So it just keeps going.
Yeah. Well, you speak to Jan. He's definitely got a South African accent.
Absolutely. Well, Barry, it's been great catching up. I'm going to look forward to chatting about your swim, bike, and run and some nutrition in upcoming episodes, but thanks for your time today on the Kona Edge.
Thank you. See ya.
And that is a wrap on this edition of the podcast. Thanks again for listening. Much appreciated. Thank you to our guest, Barry. Love chatting to Barry. And yeah, can't wait to share some more of his journey with you. Next week, Thursday, we'll be chatting to Barry about his swim and some of the things he's done over time to get better in the water. So that's coming up then. We're back again tomorrow with another edition of the Kona Edge. And don't forget that this episode was brought to you by jackrabbit.com. If you'd like to get get into the draw to win yourself one of four pairs of Hoka One One running shoes, all you need to do is head over to jackrabbit.com/KonaEdge or simply text the word jackrabbit to 44222. That's jackrabbit to 44222, and I will send you all the details straight back. From myself, Brad Brown, have yourself a superb Wednesday. We'll chat tomorrow. Cheers.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Kona Edge. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Simply search for the Kona Edge.
Well, we head to Australia now to touch base with he's not a, let me start again, Barry. Sorry, it's like amateur hour here. Sorry, man.